I said, "We're doing that." Walt said, "What are you trying to do? You work yourself out of all the jobs? You're getting lazy on us up here?" I said, "Yeah, I am. I am. That's what I'm trying to do. That's the goal. Try to work yourself out of your job, right? And that's my goal." And Allison is such a great and gracious person for jumping in and doing that. That is not easy, all right? And so I appreciate it so much, Allison, for all that you do. Okay, one more round of applause for her as she did that again. All right. Give her as much encouragement as possible so she keeps doing it. And if you think that might be a talent of yours, you say, "Hey, I can get up there and talk, and people will pay attention to me," then feel free to come up and we can work you into this rotation, all right? So don't feel like it's just something that's going to be held down by me or Alice, and anybody can jump in on this process. We'd love for you to get involved in that. All right. I was thinking this week. I do think, by the way, for those of you who don't know, I was thinking this week as I was scrolling through a website on my phone, that the internet is just a remarkable tool, right? And, you know, I know, newsflash, right? It's 2022, and pastors just now jumping on the fact the internet's remarkable. I know. So bear with me. It's remarkable, but and I think we, much like the good weather we have, I think we kind of take it for granted sometimes, right? We become so conditioned to having access to media, news, and games, information, all those things that have the click of a button or the fingertips, right? And now, while that can be a great source of grief and a great time waster, if you're like me, there are times that it proves beneficial. And one of my favorite uses is to be able to figure out how to do something. Right? You ever had this come up in your life where you need something going on? You're like, "Man, I just don't quite know how to put this together. I don't quite know how to figure this out." And you can look and you can find somewhere online there's a video or an article to make sure you know how to do this, right? I just did this yesterday. I was like, "Oh, how do I take care of this?" Whatever it was. I don't even remember what it was. I said, "Oh, I can look up a YouTube video for it," right? Because we've come to the point in our society where just about everything has been done, and somebody who did it has already made a video or an article about how to do it, right? That's just kind of where we're at, right? Now, you can go the tried and true route and do what I did and watch YouTube, but there's this awesome website called WikiHow. Anybody seen or used WikiHow? Yes, some no. All right, WikiHow. It's like Wikipedia. If you know what Wikipedia is, it's just this big database of general information. WikiHow is a big database of articles of how to do something. And the best part about WikiHow is it has photos, right? It has lots of pictures. And I need pictures, right? I need lots of pictures. And so I really appreciate this website when I have to go to do something. I look up, "Hey, WikiHow, great. Let me just look up how to do whatever," right? Now, what I find slightly concerning and slightly amusing is the list of featured articles on the website. And I had to share this with you this week to kind of break the ice a little bit because I thought these were too good. Four of these jumped out to me as I was scrolling through. I was like, "Man, I got to share these." And so I took a couple of screenshots of these pictures, some of just a couple of pictures in these articles of these WikiHow articles. And we're going to roll through them just to use four. Josh is going to help me out. The first one he's going to throw up here, right here in just a sec. Anybody? Yeah. Anybody want to guess what this article's about? No? All right. It's how to fight an ostrich. All right? It's how to fight an ostrich. Now, I don't know why you need to fight an ostrich or how to survive that attack, but if you need to, you can go to WikiHow and they can tell you step by step how to fight and win against an ostrich. All right? Let's go to the second one. The second one is, how can you tell a chicken is bad? All right? There's an article for that if you need to know how to tell a chicken is bad. All right? That's pretty important. Who wants to get sick, right? So you can find an article on WikiHow. Next, this should be fairly obvious, unclogging a toilet, right? You know how to unclog a toilet. You can go to WikiHow and figure that out. Fourth one, which I thought would be even more funny. What's the fourth one? Let's go to the next one here, Josh. There we go. What do you think this is talking about? Besides, this is an article on how to kiss. An article on a kiss. And I love that it gives the guy instead of the girl brushing his teeth. Like, what are the guys, what are the people have bad breath? Anyway, it's how to kiss, right? So you can go and find an article on how to kiss. And, hey, you want to graduate to next level on how to kiss, there's an article. I don't have a photo for this one, so I apologize. How to French kiss, all right? So you want to graduate to French kissing, there's a WikiHow article for that, too. It's just fantastic the world we live in. I just so appreciate the internet. It's such a great resource, right? Man, and I know some of you are so disappointed I don't have a photo for that French kissing. But you can go on and look for yourself. I promise you, all right? Now, what I learned from this little experiment is that I'm not going to assume anymore that somebody knows how to do something that I know how to do. All right? Besides the ostrich attack thing, because you need to know how to do that. But the rest of these things, should be totally obvious and totally common knowledge, right? But apparently they're not, right? Because somewhere, some parent or friend has totally failed where yours maybe succeeded, and somebody in life is now going around the internet to find out how to kiss, or to find out how to unclog the toilet, or to how to tell a chicken in bed. Some of these most basic functions of life are now in a how-to article online. Now, that's so telling in our society, where we're at and how we operate as a culture. Because while that's funny, I think it's kind of sad. But it is the reality that we live in. So I thought it would be interesting and helpful as we did the same thing this morning. Now, we're not going to go to WikiHow this morning. We're going to use the Bible, which I think really is WikiHow before WikiHow even existed, right? You just have to really know where to look and get over the fact that there's not going to be any pictures. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look into how to do a whole bunch of things. There's going to be a whole series on this. Actually, we kind of started it last week. I didn't realize it at the time, but as I look back, it's kind of how to deal with pain, right? Emotional pain. So this week, we're going to talk about how do we deal with conflict in relationships. And we're going to do a whole bunch of things fast today, but this is what we're going to focus on. We're going to look at a different element of life that we've probably been inadequately prepared for, and we're going to examine how the Bible helps us to deal with those things in constructive ways instead of deconstructive ways. So the hope is that we're going to learn how to do things differently. You see on the sign out front that it says deal different, right? That's our goal in the next few weeks, is to deal with life differently than we've probably been raised or that we've been instructed to do, using the Bible as our how-to guide. And so we're going to do that together today. Before we do, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to ask you a question. We're going to answer with each other, and we're going to discuss it out loud today, too. So we're going to take five. We're going to take a break. While we're taking a break, I want you to ask this question of and answer it of one another. On average, this is average, don't think of your worst or your best week, think of your medium week. On average, how many arguments or maybe just heated discussions? Maybe you don't argue. I don't argue. I have heated discussions. I have debates, right? Maybe you have those. How many do you have of those on a weekly basis, right? Think of work, think of home, think of wherever you are. On average weekly basis, how many heated discussions or arguments are you having? All right? So ask and answer that of each other. We'll be back in five to talk about it together. Go ahead. All right, everybody. Let's do this. I don't have Mr. Rich here today, but we're going to yell it out together. I think it'll be okay. We're just looking for numbers. What is your average time during the week that you have a heated discussion or a healthy debate in your house? Or maybe you call it an argument. I don't know. Whatever phrase you want to use. How many times a week on average is that happening around your place? Anybody want to volunteer to yell out a number? Go ahead, Scott. There you go. Four times a day. That's do the math, right? There you go. All right. Okay, good. Appreciate that, Scott. Yeah, awesome. Anyone else? That's a good start. Nobody else argues, man. I'll tell you what. Good. Thank you, Dave. That's it. All right. Oh, wow. A few months. Nice. That was great, man. I need to get on that schedule, right? 1 week and a few months. That's a good, that's a good workout, man. I appreciate that. Anybody else? That's great. Thank you for your honesty. And anyone, ever again, everyone else is totally fine. Go ahead, Dawn. Okay. All right. Once or twice a week or once or twice an hour or a good night. All right, yeah. I hear that. Arguing before you come into church? Okay, with the kids. You have the kids in the car. yes. Yeah, I was telling the van cleaner. I said, yeah, my kids, they're talking about, you know, kids and arguments. And said, yeah, my kids argue. They only have to walk for like 5 feet from the church to here, or from the house to the church, and they're still arguing the whole time. So I totally get it. Totally get it. Anybody else want to confess how many times you have a heated discussion with them? Yeah. Discussions with dinner time. Anybody else have that growing up? Like you're sitting around the table and it was like, that was the time to let it all out. That wall in the back, okay. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I totally Oh, this is just fun. Of course it is. Of course it is. That's what they're here for, right? That's what they're here for, right? See? Anybody else? Those are great. Those are great. Alright, fantastic. My average is probably 3 or 4 times a week, and that's only because I work alone. Alright, so if all of you are thinking, oh, that's not a lot, but I'm usually by myself in my office, so if I have to hear this question, it's with myself, and that's kind of weird, so I try not to do that. I think David's mentioned that before, maybe with yourself too, so maybe the answer's going to come in. But, so most of my heated discussions involve my wife and kids, and a lot of that comes from the fact that my mom, I'm too much like my mom that I really want to admit, and she loves having debates right now. And so I kind of got that from her, and my wife does not like having them, and so it's a game of how far can I push before she just gets too ticked off for me to even have a reasonable conversation with her, and then I have to lay off. And so, yeah, so about 3 or 4 times a week we kind of get into it or something, or the kids. And the kids are constant. You know, no offense, kids in the room, or kids watching online today, or they're watching back later. But I've been a kid. I did it all the time, every day. I was not interested in getting along with my siblings. It just was not in my, you know, that was not my plan for the day. And so it's always an argument going on. Usually in my life now, it's other things that aren't incredibly important in the grand scheme of things, which are at least not important to me, which is maybe why we're fighting in the first place. But at any rate, that's kind of where I'm at with that. So the point of these questions and discussions is kind of reinforce what we already know. That if you spend any amount of time with anyone, any significant length of time, you're inevitably going to have conflict, right? You can all take your hands. That's what it works, right? It's unavoidable. No matter how hard you try it, it's going to come up. The question isn't if someone you know will do something that's going to tick you off. It's when they're going to do it, and what are you going to do when it happens? In general, the majority of us, I think, fall into 2 camps when this happens. When somebody does something to us and just catches us off guard, and we're going to respond to conflict, we've got 2 smooth modes here. We're fighters or we're avoiders, right? Fighters, you know those, as we identify, those are the ones that are already ready. They're ready to jump right into the conflict. And if they're not going to start it, they're going to finish it, right? The avoiders, a little easier, maybe a little harder, rather, to find to the pinpoint here. The avoiders are the ones that typically don't go in to pick a fight, and if they're offended or someone does something to them, they're usually kind of sweeping under the rug, right? They're going to kind of bury it. On the surface, this group seems like they're totally reasonable people, right? It seems like, oh, man, I wish I could be like them. They can just kind of let it roll off their back, and they can not bring it up again, and they seem like great people. But what's really happening there is they're not dealing with the conflict. Not dealing with the pain from the conflict either. So it just gets shoved under there. And what we talked about last week starts happening. It leads to bitterness. It leads to resentment. Right? All these things happen when you have avoiders. Right? I'm an avoider. Anybody else here avoid conflict like a passion? Yes. I don't want it. Just let me get away from it as fast as possible. I don't want that awkwardness in my life. Right? And so I try to avoid it. But this is kind of where we're at. We're either fighters, and I'm going to punch you right back when you come to my face and you say something wrong, or I'm just going to avoid. I'm going to duck and run. Right? This is where we're at. We're usually living primarily with these 2 methods of conflict resolution. And we've seen the results, right? You've lived with the results of these. Meetings with friends. This underlying, unresolved tension, right? You ever been in those? You ever run into somebody again that you had a fight with, that you had a disagreement with, and even if you're an avoider, and now you're coming to them again, and you're having like, oh, man, they said something weird to me last time, and I don't know if they know they did, or I don't know how I should react, and it's just weird tension that goes on in those conversations, right? That happens sometimes. Some other results are maybe an abusive relationship, right? That can happen. Breakup often comes from the fact we don't know how to resolve conflict appropriately. Broken homes, kids who can't wait to leave home, kids who can't stay out of home, who can constantly come back home, right? Who never leave. That's happened there too. Workplace tension, bullying in school. Mental health breakdown, and as we've seen recently, the violence that comes from that, from dysfunctional homes, all that leads back to inappropriately dealing or deconstructing our conflict resolution, not knowing how to constructively handle these things. All these big issues start with small things that never get handled appropriately because we don't know how to deal with it differently. So in light of the events of this past week, especially as I was putting this together, I thought it was no better time than now to learn how to make a difference in our lives, in the lives of our families, and in our children's lives, how to learn how to deal deal differently with conflict, right? So today we're going to learn how to by looking at two teachings of Jesus in the book of Matthew. We're going to start in Matthew 7, and we're going to turn to Matthew 18. So if you have a Bible, I'm going to encourage you to turn to Matthew 7, 1 through 5. If you have a Bible app, you can open up your app to whatever you deal with best. Feel free to turn to those. While you're doing that, I've got one more question I just want to just, you can just think about, or you can holler it out if you want to. It's totally up to you. When someone has done something that has hurt or offended you, what's the first thing you do, or the first thing you want to do? Again, you don't have to answer, but if you want to throw it out there, feel free. Someone's done something to tick you off, what's the first thing that you do or want to do, even if you don't do it? Turn right back at him. What do you say? Yeah. Forgive him. Oh, okay. Well, that's a great response. All right. Cry. All right. Anybody else has a great? Right. Accept that. Tell me why. All right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Even bad. Yeah. Let them know that you're hurting. Yeah. Very good. Okay. Good. So, right, if you didn't immediately react, and some of us do, that's important to find, right? You're going to immediately react when someone ticks you off, right? You probably have absorbed that blow a little bit, right? And then you probably went home and you looked at a safe place and you probably stewed on it for a while. Well, better yet, my favorite, you took it back and you went on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and you told everybody about it. That's my favorite one, right? I thank God that I don't have a Facebook account because every time I have to post something to the church, I accidentally have to scroll past somebody else's thing. I'm like, man, I don't want to see this, right? I don't want you. My life, I've had this special man. My life is not so important, I need to put it on Facebook, right? But so many other people's are, and they put it out there, and I'm like, man, that is so not good, right? But that's what we do. That's what we do. But before we do any of that, what Jesus wants us to do is take another step. And let's look at Matthew 7, verses 1 through 5 to find out what that step is. So I'm going to read this out loud. It's going to be up on the screen. It's broken up in a couple of slides to exhaust, so we'll just do this again. Jesus says this. He says, before you react when someone offends you, do this. Judge not, that you not be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own? Well, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your own eye when there is a log in yours? Verse 5 says this. You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you'll see clear to take the speck out of your brother's eye. What Jesus is saying here, I can't go into all of these verses, there's a whole other series that you can unpack on judgment, but what this is telling us, what Jesus is telling us here, is that step one in how to deal with conflict in relationships differently is to be honest with and about yourself first. You see, our first desire is to protect ourselves, right? And in conflict, that means focusing outward, not within, right? That means bringing the shield up when someone has done something that's offended you instead of looking and saying, all right, what's going on here? You want to react in some way. So Jesus says first, hit pause. Hit pause here. Don't punch back verbally immediately. Don't run and hide and bury it either. Deal with it first by dealing with yourself. Ask yourself whether you've had a critical or negative or overly sensitive attitude that has led to something in your life with all this conflict up. Maybe the person you're having this argument with isn't really doing it to hurt you, but you've got something going on that you've been carrying all week long that maybe has just set you off in that moment. So hit the pause button first, right? Maybe the person who hurt you wasn't trying to. Or maybe they were just acting the way they normally do, but you were bruised from something else, right? And now you're more sensitive, right? In writing to the church in Philippi, Paul speaks of this. Right? He says, if you're going to be a Jesus follower, here's what you should be striving to do. Philippians 4 5. I don't have it on the screen for you, but I want you to listen. He says, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Now, that can be a hard ball to cross, right? But Paul and Jesus' point is that sometimes the perceived effect is just that. Instead of thinking the worst of someone or quickly taking the offense back to them, we should be honest with ourselves and consider the possibility that maybe we're overreacting. Right? Can we agree that sometimes we overreact? Right? I do. Right? Frequently, especially if I'm tired or I got a lot going on or I'm stressed, I'm going to freak out when someone comes to me. Right? So be honest with ourselves that maybe we're overreacting. Right? There's times that people are going to be joking around. Right? I had this happen in my life all the time. My kids, I'm at the dinner table, Walt, or everyone else, that my kid's sitting around and someone will say something to another offhand, not just kind of joking around, not being serious about it, and that person who's maybe been hurt by something else that day just flies off the handle, And then they come running to me, right? Because I'm dad, so I got to fix this, right? They're thinking on this. So one kid offends the other, and they come running to me, and they said, "Dad, Dad, Dad, do you know what he said to me?" And I'll listen, generally, if I wasn't in the room when it happened, right? I'll listen, and if there's something there, I'll address it. But most of the time, what I'm going to tell them is, shut them up, right? That's what I'm telling my kids. Because life, one, doesn't revolve around you, right? Second of all, there's some times where you're overly sensitive. And we can deal with that. We can address why you're hurt and why you're overly sensitive. Maybe there's something going on there. But you also need to know that there's people in your life that aren't trying to hurt you, but you're easily hurt. And so you don't have to get skin, right? That's part one of it. The other aspect of step one here is to be honest with yourself and how your words or actions may have played a part in how this conflict played out. Maybe there's something that we said or done, right? It's so easy to point a finger at somebody else and say, "Oh, it's all their fault," right? They should know. They should know they're hurting me. Instead of looking at ourselves and all the things we may have done that have led up to it. Now, that might take an honest win, right? You might have to do that evaluation on your own because it's so hard to see our own flaws. So it might take a really honest friend to come up to you and say, "Hey, I know that you and this person had a disagreement, but you know, you didn't really do a great job yourself leading up to it," right? You might have avoided that. So it might take an honest friend to come in and help you objectively look at yourself. Now, once we've taken time to do that, because that is just step one, once we've taken time to do that, that might be a few hours, it might be a few days, it might be however long it needs to take to process this, but we need to do this first. Be honest with yourself and about yourself. Step two is in 18, Matthew 18, verse 15. So let's turn there together. It's going to be up on the screen. So step one, be honest with yourself. How are you doing? Are you overly sensitive? Are you something you did that could lead up to this? Evaluate yourself first. Step two, Matthew 18:15, Jesus says this. He says, "If your brother or sister sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother or your sister." See, there's something to note here, really, before we get too far in step two. One, Jesus is talking here to the disciples, right? These very close followers of him. These people who have given up everything to follow him. Families have been left to follow Jesus. They have agreed to live with him and with each other. And again, anytime you're around people for an extended period of time, there's going to be conflict. So he's instructing them, if you're going to follow Jesus, you're going to deal with conflict differently than those around you, right? So you can put these steps, step one and then we're going to talk about here in step two, into practice outside of Jesus-following community. And I encourage you to. You'll get some great results out of this. But you must, if you're legitimately trying to follow Jesus, you have to put these into practice within the community. Because if you don't, you're showing yourself to be no different than you were before you met Jesus, and you're making it so much harder for those around you to actually live out the way they're supposed to be. Just a few things. So you can do this outside the church, outside the Jesus follower believers in your life, but you should, there's no doubt about this, should be doing it within the community. Now, with that said, Jesus is saying that you have to deal differently by not holding things in or blasting things to the world, but to go to the person directly and talk to them. Now, this isn't revolutionary, right? I mean, Jesus isn't stealing some this ancient heavenly knowledge about, oh, man, woo, right? This is, should be somewhat of common sense, but again, it's not, right? This is the key how in our lives, right? Because we don't do this. Most of us don't do this. If someone offended us, we're either fighting or running, right? And Jesus is saying, when someone hurts you, first look at yourself, and then step two, go to that person and not anyone else, and address it with them directly first. Now, again, this assumes you've done step one, and that the offense is actually an offense, and not just a question, right? Someone has lied to you. Someone has cheated on you. Someone has abused you. Someone has intentionally tried to verbally tear you down. Someone has gossiped about you. Real sin is what Jesus is referring to here, not just a difference of opinion. All right? Now, those things have happened, and we are to go physically meet with them one-on-one and let them know. So what happens here when you're doing this in private and between the two of you alone, what happens is you're minimizing misunderstanding and you're minimizing God. Right? You think maybe you may took their comment completely out of context. That happens. Right? Or maybe they're having a rough day and they took it out on you. But instead of addressing what then you take it to heart and you start telling people, watch out for that person. Right? Now what have you done? Now you still have this other conflict going on over here with this person, and now you spread division and strife amongst everyone else around that person because you couldn't take it to them first. So you got to go the direction. Also, what happens here is when you attempt resolution between the two of you alone, it keeps your reputation clean. I want to trust you too, because this goes back to blasting on Facebook in the world. You blast the problems in public, and people are going to notice. And maybe you say, that's why I do it. But they're not going to get the attention you want. It's not the long run. I guarantee you. You know, you think you've got to put it out there, and people can be sympathetic to you and give you all the things you want and say, oh, man, you're right. Because you want the affirmation in your life. And what they're really saying is, man, that person really needs to keep this stuff private. Man, you need to know all this. You need to blast everybody. And if you blast with one person in public, the odds are you're going to blast them. That's life. That's reality. I guarantee that. Even if you didn't have Facebook. This happened before Facebook existed, right? And if you're going to go public with your problems, right, with one person, your odds are you're going to be with somebody else. So Jesus is saying, avoid all that, right? Avoid that hassle, that conflict. Avoid creating strife and division in your life. Keep it between you and the person alone. Right? Last part of verse 15 explains Jesus' motive and what our motive should be in following steps should by going directly, is that perhaps by doing so, we're going to gain our brother or our sister. But if you can gain something, it means you can lose something, right? So what Jesus is saying here is maybe the person has sinned against you or against others in a Jesus-following community. Our first concern shouldn't be how that person needs to make it right with me, but about how I can help them to deal with whatever is causing this conflict in themselves first. The motive is lost, and the initiative is on me, the one who's to help. Again, now this is radically different. This is heaven's gift, because we don't deal with this. No one in any other culture deals with things this way, right? The initiative, whenever we've been hurt, is to get resolution because we want to be fixed, right? We want that hurt to be known and to be resolved for ourselves, right? But what Jesus is saying here is the one who considers himself sinned against bears the responsibility of initiating reconciliation, of mending the fence. We're not to wait for the offender to come and apologize, but we're to go and start the process with them. I want to wrap your mind around that for just a minute, because most of us have always learned in dealing with conflict that it revolves around us, right? He's hurt me. I need justice. I need an apology. I deserve it. It's about me. And I can say that because that's how I know I've lived this, right? We'll even follow some of these steps we're laying out here if that means we get what we need. But what Jesus is saying here is a complete 180-degree turn. We go to him not to have our wounds healed first, but to see if he can help heal them. In that process, our food is here. Just like everything else Jesus taught us, others, not questions. If you leave with nothing else today, I want you to wrap yourself mind around that. It's one key principle in conflict resolution, dealing with it differently as Jesus taught us to. It's about healing others. It's not about getting yourself right. It's not about making yourself feel better. It's about loving them enough to go and say, you hurt me, but I want to help work through this so that you can be healed. And then we can talk about how to help me. I'm stopping here. Because that's completely opposite from how we live our lives. Now, say you've done this, right? Say you've got a hold of this principle, you understand this concept, you've done step one, you've lived it yourself. You've done step two, you've gone to that person directly, and you said, hey, let's talk through this. I've got this issue, you did this to me, or you did it to somebody else, and I really need to talk to you about it because it's really weighing me down. And you're working through that resolution process. Now, say it doesn't work. Say it doesn't work. What if they don't apologize? What if they don't listen to you? What if they just blow you off? So what you need to do first is spend time reviewing that conversation you have with them one-on-one, all right? Because not all conversations go great. If you had a conversation with me, you know it hasn't gone great because I've forgotten half the things I meant to tell you when we had it. Most of the time, I think of things well after a conversation, and so what I have to do is I have to go back and say, oh, yeah, I totally forgot. Let me talk to you about this. And so you need to review the conversation in your mind. Did something come out wrong? Did you get something? Kind of process that. Think through it, and then go back again. Don't waste one more time. Right? Don't just think, oh, well, I did step two. They weren't listening. Move on. I'm done with this. Try to work it. If it doesn't work, however, Jesus gives option number two here, 18:16. He says, but if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses, right? So what he's saying here is you're not going to go out and you're not going to find a couple of people who you think might agree with you, right? Get them on your side, and then go waylay the person so you can prove you're right. Right? That's what we want to do. We want to say, man, I got a couple of friends. They always agree with me. They know they're on my side no matter what. Let me get them because they're going to come back, give me back up, right? So I can have strength to my argument so I can win the argument. He's saying, don't do that. So you get two or three. One or two. You get a couple of people around you. But if one of them coming isn't to make you right, such a prayer for them, restore the person and the relationship. Bringing one of you, one or two of them with you again is going to help the person you're coming to help understand how serious this is. Right? But it's not something you're just going to brush under the rug. This is a serious hurt that you've done, or they've done in your life. And so bringing two people or more is going to come and say, yeah, all right, this is serious. This is good. We need to work through. Hopefully. And what they're going to do, hopefully, in that process is hopefully support you, but also lovingly convince that person that they need to, that they need to apologize, that they need to address this wrong. That's what these two people are going to do. Now, prayer for that's going to take care. All right? You get together with a couple people, you're all meeting, everybody hashes it out, life moves on, everything's great. All right? Now, again, I stress the importance of doing this in a Jesus-following community. Because Jesus says the way this world is going to know who we are is if we love each other. If we can't work in conflict together the right way, we can't love each other. So I want to stress that this is why this is here. But what if that doesn't work either? Jesus said step three. I'm not going to go into it because it's more for a corporate church model, but in your own life, that probably won't work. So I'm going to just say this, that if the offender still doesn't see the need to apologize, still doesn't need to an opportunity to change, and he's done everything he can, he's done step one, he's done step two, you bring a couple of people in with you, they can't do this, then what you have to do at that point, you have to just realize that person isn't invested in the relationship anymore. To this point, we might not understand why they're not invested in it, but we have to be willing to let it go. We have to be willing to let it go. We have to acknowledge their decision. We maybe grieve over the loss, right? If it's a good friend, right? If it's a husband or wife or a co-worker you've known for a long time, and maybe they're just breaking off, you've got to be able to say, hey, I don't know why, but I let you go. And we have to continue to treat them with respect and love, no matter what they do from that point. Right? And no matter their decision, whether they're going to apologize and everything works out, reconciliation happens, or they walk away, dealing with conflict differently involves step three. And we're going to find that in Matthew 18, 21 and 22. Jesus is talking with his disciples about this process, and then Peter immediately comes up after and says, hey, Jesus, I got a bone to pick with you about this. Let me ask you this question, all right? Matthew 18, 21, 22. Then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me? All the time, Peter. They'll offend you all the time, right? How often will my brother sin against me? And I forgive him for it. As many as seven times? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you seven times. 70 times. Say to you seven times. One of the most unique features of dealing with conflict this way is the pursuit of genuine forgiveness in the reconciliation process. See, we who profess to follow Jesus have experienced the greatest forgiveness in the world. I guarantee it. And yet, we often fail to show that same forgiveness to others. We'll say, I forgive them. I just don't want anything to do with it. Right? He said that. I've said that. However, how would you feel if God said that to you? Right? I forgive you, but I don't want anything to do with it. That's not love. That's not forgiveness. That's not reconciliation. Praise God. That's not how he works. Right? That's not how God works. Instead, he forgives you totally. And he opens the way for genuine reconciliation, total restoration of this relationship between you and him. Peter says, hey, seven times, Jesus? That's a lot of times I'm to forgive my brother who's hurt me. Seven times, right? That's a lot. That's a lot of second chances. And Jesus says, do what I do for you. Forgive without keeping time. How many doors in our lives are you holding shut? Someone trying to come back because we can't forgive the Jesus. How How many relationships are we leaving broken? How many awkward conversations are we willing to have, or bitter glances thrown across rooms, or yelling matches in driveways, or nights spent alone and isolated because we can't let go and genuinely free them from the pain they've caused us, even if they never received it? So you say, you don't know the pain. I don't know. You say, I can't. I won't be hurt. Jesus has been asking you to stay in an abusive situation. So what are you talking about? That's not what I'm advocating you. But what he is asking you is forgive them of the pain they've caused you. And to let them know you forgive them of this crisis. You see, before laying out how to deal with conflict differently, Jesus told this parable. It really captures the whole heart of what he's driving at and giving you steps to deal with it. I don't have it on screen. I want you to listen to it. Very small, very short story. Very short story. And then Matthew 18, verses 10 to 15. He says this. He says, see that you do not despise one of these little ones. And he's talking about the disciples, those two, those who follow him. See you do not despise one of these little ones. For I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. And he tells us, he says, what do you think? If a man has 100 sheep, one of them is gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountain and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. Jesus got to love in verse 14. He says, so it's not the will of my Father who is in heaven. One of these saying that going outside the community is God. Right? To be removed from God, to be removed from fellow believers, disappears. To suffer. To live in a cut-off situation. And what he's saying is that the Father doesn't quit. The Father loves the 99. He loves all 100. Right? He loves everybody here. And when that one starts walking off, when that one is in something to offend the other 99 and starts walking off and straying away and says, I don't need to apologize, I'm going to keep going my own way, he doesn't say, forget it. Let him go. He don't want him anyway. He says, I need to find him. They're walking out there by themselves. They're isolated. They're fearful. They're scared. Yeah, they might put up a big talk. Yeah, they might be angry. Yeah, they might look like they could take care of themselves. Yeah, they do all these things that they're praying. They're going to be picked off. I'm not going to leave them out there on their own. No matter what they've said to me, no matter what they've done to me, no matter how many times they've cursed at me, spit on me, abused me, whatever the case is, I'm going to get pursued. And when I find them, and they respond by coming back at me, I'm going to do this over again. Later than ever in the rest of the flock. Not because the rest is important, but because that act of finding you is so crucial to the heart of God. God is pursuing us in love and forgiveness. He is chasing us down to reconcile us to Him and to one another. And that's why Jesus then goes in these steps. So don't leave your brother walking by himself. Don't leave your sister out by herself. Don't take so quick a sense that you cut yourself off from the rest. I'm pursuing you, even as you walk astray. And I'm calling us to pursue that one in our lives. Or two, or three, or four, or however many there are in our lives that are so far removed from God and say, they'll never come back. Even if they, maybe they never were. But He's chasing you down. And so we should be doing the same. So this morning, if you're a seeker, what we're here to do is faith church, is first and foremost, to talk to you. It's to say, you may be the one who's walked away. You may be the one who's been hurt. You may be the one who's hurt someone else. You may be the one who's talked to God and said, I don't need you anymore. This morning, you hear want to encourage you to continue to be a part of this process. Sometimes praying involves kind of coming back in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out. And this is a safe place to be. We want you to be here. We want you to come and sit. Whether you know what you're saying with Jesus or not, and to sit in the space and to address questions, to work through life together, to not be afraid of judgment, to not come in and say, oh, I've hurt so many people, I'm going to hurt others. We're going to do our best to love you and to work through conflict with you the same way Jesus asked us to. Amen. And to show you what real love looks like. To love you that way. And so we encourage you to be here with us if you're ready to do that. We encourage you to commit to a relationship with Jesus if you're ready to do that. We're going to give you an opportunity to do so in just a minute. But for believers, before we wrap it up, we got a calling, ladies and gentlemen. Jesus is a responsibility, not a request. Jesus didn't say, if you feel like when your brother has hurt you, hey, if you think you got a free moment, go over there and talk to them, and you can work it out when you get some free time. That'd be great. That'd be awesome. You really love you to do that. Like, Jesus is not that kind of guy, right? That's not what he's talking about here. He says, if you've hurt, if you've been hurt, go and reconcile. Find that person that I've chased you. Don't hold on to it. Don't avoid it. Don't fight it. We've got a responsibility. And, thank God, the very Spirit of God working in us to deal with these things differently. So we have to follow these steps. We have to be honest with ourselves. We have to address issues one-on-one. And we have to forgive even when the other person might not want to. Despite what we've learned, despite what we've seen, despite what maybe we've even been doing right now. But it's the steps that we have to take to begin to make a difference. Begin to make a difference in our families. We've seen this handle conflict the long way. To see us make a difference in our community. To show a different way forward. To show a different, better way to live together that doesn't involve being isolated or bitter, doesn't involve abuse or violence, but the reconciliation. To love and forgiveness. too impersonal. Once you become time to ask me again. Don't wait. Don't say, I'll do it next week. Don't say, I'll call. I'll text you. Don't find me. Nobody else. You don't have to worry about that. That's a dumb blast. And just think yourself here. We're going to talk together about what happens next. That's the end of this game. Let's do this prayer. And we're going to have two leaders, all of us, and we're going to have to set this up. Heavenly Father, we thank you, God, that we are forgiven. Lord, that we are not special people set apart because we are extra good or we do things the right way, quote unquote. We are people who are passionately in love with you, who desperately need your forgiveness above all. God, who constantly have to come back to what you called us to do, have to respond to your Spirit working in us because we don't do this right, not the way we should. It's not it. God, help us, Lord. Work in us, Jesus, this week so that if someone has hurt us, God, that we don't wait for them to come and apologize. God, we don't avoid them. God, we don't fight them back. But God, we come to you first and say, Lord, forgive me for holding it against them. And then go to them and say, I forgive you. Even if they don't know what's happened, even if they don't reciprocate, God, I pray, Lord, that we have the courage, God, the faith, the trustworthiness in you to be able to let it go and to love them back. God, to chase them as you have chased us. To forgive us, to love us who have strayed, God, and to reconcile and restore those relationships in our life that we think maybe have been irreparably broken, God. Let us chase them like you chase us, Jesus, this week. God, let us be seen as people who love each other, love you in a way that's extraordinary, and deal with things differently. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Thank you so much, church. Doing this with us this morning. If you're online, thank you for being with us. We want to encourage you to like, love, share this post, subscribe to our YouTube channel, do all the things you need to do so you keep up with us, and we want to see you here next Sunday at 10 or Thursday night 6:30 on Facebook for prayer meeting as well. We invite you to share with someone to that, and we can't wait to see you.